WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Before we meet singer Teddy Pendergrass, let's hear one of the solo recordings he made for Philadelphia International Records after he left Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. This is Love TKO, recorded in 1980.
All my years, I guess I shed some tears. I told myself time and time again, this time I'm gonna win. But another fight, things ain't right, I'm losing again. Takes a fool to lose twice, start all over again. Think I better let it go. Like another love TKO. Oh, think I better let it go. What you think about it, girl?
Ever since the 1982 car crash that left Teddy Pendergrass paralyzed from the chest down, it's been difficult for him to perform. In May, he gave his first full concert since the crash. He has several more concert dates coming up. In 1998, he told me that he sang in church as a child. At the age of 10, he thought he was called to preach, and he started giving little sermons. I asked Teddy Pendergrass if he thought he'd grow up to be a preacher.
That is what I'm sure my mother thought I would do. And at the time, until I learned different, until I grew up, that's probably what I thought I would do as well. It's just that when you reach that ripe old age of 13, young kids, you know, they start to grow up and grow out, and they get, you know, get into their own thing and start doing their own thing. And I started getting involved in music and becoming interested in what we call secular music. And I saw... Got a chance to see Jackie Wilson.
You said that's the experience that really changed you.
It changed my life around. So it was.
What was it about the Jackie Wilson performance?
Just a consummate performer to me. Just my image of him was just so huge, and he was just such a master, a taskmaster. He controlled the stage. I'd never seen anybody do it before, like him. And he just controlled that stage. His audience was in the palm of his hands. And as I say in the book, you know, the ladies ran down to the front of the stage when they thought he had fell off to hurt himself. He had just rolled off intentionally and rolled off onto the floor. And to see the ladies run through the guardrails and just lay on top of him and appear to make mad, passionate love to him in the middle of the floor at whatever time it was that morning, to me it was just, my jaws dropped. It was like, my God.
How can I do that?
Right. Yeah. That's what I wanted to.
You first performed professionally with a small group that you met in Atlantic City. And then you moved on from that group to perform with the Cadillacs. And the Cadillacs' big hit had been Speedo, but I think this was a period when the Cadillacs had kind of franchised, so there were several groups singing under the name the Cadillacs.
Right.
Happening more and more with oldies acts now. I'm wondering if anybody ever got really angry with you when they realized that this wasn't necessarily the original
Cadillac. They didn't get mad at me because I was a drummer. I was just a guy in the band.
All right.
I could care less.
Did they get angry, though, at the singers?
I don't know. I could care less.
Really?
It was a job. It was an opportunity to, like, begin to do what it is I wanted to do. Thank goodness I had ability to play as well as sing. So, therefore, I could get a job playing until I could find a job singing.
So drums was secondary to you. What you really wanted to do is sing.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Melvin needed more backup singers, so he hired the group you were with, the Cadillacs, to be his new Blue Notes.
Mm-hmm.
So there you were, part of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
As the drummer.
Mm-hmm. How did you start singing, even though you were hired as the drummer? Because you became the lead singer.
Yeah, that was an interesting transition. How to explain? As the drummer, I was the only musician that Harold hired from the band, which was the band for the Cadillacs. So he took the singers, and he liked the way I played so much, he offered me a job. At the time, I said, oh, okay, more money, just another job. You know, he didn't fire me. Great, fine. We began to realize or recognize that sometimes the group would be late. If they were late and came late, the club owners would dock them. We would all make less money. So the band began to sing the songs that the group would sing if they were late in order to make sure and ensure that we got paid. So sometimes the Blue Notes would come in and hear us singing, and I'd be sitting on the drums playing and singing. So then they realized, oh, this guy can sing. And from there, just evolved and evolved, evolved and evolved.
My guest is singer Teddy Pendergrass. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1998 interview with singer Teddy Pendergrass. Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes was signed by Gamble and Huff, Philadelphia International Records. What do you think was unique about their approach to production? And maybe another way I should put it first is, what changed about the sound of the group once you were part of Philadelphia International?
Well, I think what Kenny and Leon saw was when they came to see us at the Apollo Club in Camden, New Jersey in 1970, what they heard was a group with a lot of dimension. They saw a group with a lot of class, a lot of savvy, a lot of experience. If nothing else, Harold was a taskmaster, and he was extremely, extremely knowledgeable about show business and how we should perform, what we should look like, how you should, as a unit, how you should do things together. The choreography was like one person was dancing. I mean, we truly could work the gamut because we had to. We had to work in front of little white ladies with blue hair in Miami Beach, and we had to work in front of pimps and hustlers and prostitutes in New York or Buffalo or wherever we were. So we had to really know what we were doing in order to continue to work, because we were working because of our reputation. We had no records.
I want to play one of your really big hits during the Philadelphia International era with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. This is The Love I Lost. You say in your memoir that originally this was supposed to be a ballad, but then the tempo got picked up. What were the changes that this song went through during the production, and why did it go through them?
It's just, once you're in the studio, magic happens, because you're in there with live musicians. And as you try different feels, as you try things, and that's the ability that you have with live musicians that you don't have with computers.
This is The Love I Lost, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, my guest Teddy Pendergrass singing lead.
The love I lost was a sweet. Hoping that you and I could make it all through, but something went wrong. We loved each other, we just couldn't get along. Take a good look at me, I'm in misery. Can't you see? But the love was a sweet love.
Yes, it was.
Love I Lost, one of the big hits of the 70s, with my guest Teddy Pendergrass singing lead.
Oh, that was good. I haven't heard that song in a long time.
Did your fans realize that the lead voice they were hearing was the voice of Teddy Pendergrass and not Harold Melvin? Because the group is called Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes, and you would assume that he was the lead singer.
Right. Well, my friends knew, but nobody else knew. And that was what really got me after a while. So a lot of times...
Did people not believe you sometimes? You say, but that's me singing lead, did they say?
Not sure. my I didn't really tell anybody.
Oh.
I'm not one like that. But however, in clubs and places we would work, and they would come to me and go, oh, that was a great show, Harold. And I'd say, I'm not Harold, that's Harold. And people would just kind of look like, huh? You know, I guess they thought I was on dope or dog food or something because I wasn't acknowledging that I was who they just knew I was. And that was quite different. And it got to a point on our third album that I demanded that my name be put on the record. I was tired of being called Harold and I wanted my just dues.
And then eventually
I wanted to be recognized. I wanted to be recognized.
After you went on your own, you eventually started doing, in addition to your regular concerts, you started doing for women only shows. What was the difference between what you did on stage or what you sang in the for women only shows than the rest of your concerts?
The difference was they were probably a little more provocative. I probably played to the audience a lot more because they were all female. And subtle differences like that.
So what would you do that was different?
Played to the audience a little differently. Nothing obscene. You just give of yourself more to your audience rather than to just play with the band or just kind of get through a show. Because if you're going to do a for women only show, you have to kind of appease the women in the audience. So don't look for things that I would do like pull my pants down or nothing like that. No, nothing like that.
What impact did it have on your ego and your personal life to be a romantic icon?
Did it have and does it have? Or did it because it's not over?
So my impression, though, is that your ego is in a different place now than it was before. My impression just from things that you've said is that you felt that your ego at times was a little out of control earlier, mm-hmm. and that's no longer the case.
It was all new. All new. And when you get that kind of adulation and people are just at your beck and call and at your feet, giving you what you want. I was a young kid, 26 years old, 27 years old. 20, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can alter your thinking from it. Sometimes your head is too big to get through a door. And mine got there. I was able to, you know, bring things back into perspective, but, yeah, it can alter your ego, can give you a nice big one. I mean, at 28 years old, I mean, I was buying a 34-room mansion in Gladwin's. It's kind of, you know, coming from a row house in North Philadelphia and buying my mother a home a mile and a half away and filling up a garage with Rolls Royces and Ferraris. I mean, I don't know a whole lot of people that do that.
Teddy Pendergrass, recorded in 1998. I'm Terry Grossen. This is Fresh Air.